Welcome to The Swing,
Canada's political analysis podcast for a global audience.
I'm Yaroslav Baran.
I'm Heather Bakken. We're going to touch on three things today: candidate eruptions, polling, and scripting.
Sure.
So let's start with the news of the day. Wow. Two major parties, candidates withdraw from the race in the last 24 hours. What's your take?
Well, in fact, the contrast between the two is very instructive on how to make campaign decisions, in the course of an election. The dominant story has been Paul Chang. He was a Liberal candidate in Markham. This story broke, I think it was on Friday. So it was several days ago, about comments he had made previously urging his supporters to basically abduct his conservative opponent and turn him into the secret police in one of these so-called, cultural offices that the Chinese state operates.
Yeah, I think we need to do a little bit of background for people who haven't been following it.
Sure.
So he was the incumbent candidate in Markham.
That's
in
right. Neville,
and he made this comment in January on Chinese language media. So it took a little bit while for it to surface in English media.
Yeah.
And basically, there's a bounty on the PRC put a bounty on the head of a conservative candidate.
Yes, who was a well-known human rights activist in Hong Kong, yes.
Yeah, so I just wanted to frame that for people in case I haven't been following.
So thanks, I appreciate that.
This is a serious issue, especially at a time with transnational repression being a real concern for this federal election campaign.
And that's precisely why it was such a big deal. First of all, politically, it's echoes of foreign interference, and every party leader wants to look like they've got a zero tolerance for significant foreign interference. Secondly, the comments themselves were really beyond the pale. There's no way that those kinds of comments can stand, that a person like that can continue to be a candidate. Look, I was getting texted by journalists on like day one of this controversy saying, so what do you think? Is he gone today, or is it going to be tomorrow, or do you think he'll limp along till midweek? Like, veteran campaign watchers all knew that there's only one inevitable conclusion to a controversy like this. This person could not continue to be a candidate. I don't think Mr. Carney handled it well because he allowed it to drag on for 4 days. He was knocked off his scripting for 4 days. He had a $25 billion housing announcement yesterday that got almost zero coverage because all the media wanted to talk about was how on earth can this guy continue to be your candidate? And in contrast, there were two conservative candidates dropped today.
One in Windsor and one in Montreal.
Yeah, that's right. And in those cases, first of all, the one in Windsor, this was a former city councillor, well-known, already in public life, who had said some stuff on private radio calling for public hangings.
Of the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, at the time.
Yeah, among others. And another one, the other one in Montreal, kind of touting conspiracy theories and Kremlin propaganda. And this kind of came out in his social media posts. So in both of these cases, the party leader immediately took action. Like, these guys were spiked within hours. The comments came forward, decisive action at the central campaign. Party leader says, there's no bloody way these guys are going to be waving my banner in this campaign. Done. And that illustrates the difference between showing leadership, being decisive about these things, versus not optimally handling a candidate eruption and allowing it to fester for several days. And one of the biggest problems is you lose 3 or 4 days of scripting. The Liberals were knocked off their game for every single day that this thing dragged on until the inevitable conclusion.
Okay, so knocked off your game and scripting.
Yeah.
You have run comms for several national campaigns. How does it actually work in a campaign with your scripting and your ability to pivot or, change it up as events on the ground unfold and you need to respond and not lose those 3 days of messaging or the 4 days of messaging, to your point?
Yeah. Well, every party at the beginning of a campaign will have a canned message for day one, day two, day three, day 12, day 40. I mean, the whole campaign is pre-planned in advance. You've got something policy-wise proactive that you are going to be launching for every single day. Now, a smart campaign is one that's nimble, that realizes, like, I've been there before, where it's 11 o'clock at night, I'm working on, you know, I'm finalizing the press release for tomorrow morning and doing our candidate talking points for tomorrow morning and everything finally done. I can go home. Oh, nope. They switched it up. We're no longer going to be talking about X tomorrow. We are now going to be talking about Y because of some external factor. Something happened out there and you want it. And you want to demonstrate that you are responsive to the real world. So you pull out, you know, you pull out the can that you had planned for, you know, day 14, and now you're going to be doing it on day 8 instead. That's life. It happens. And that's how a good campaign runs. You maintain flexibility to move things around, to be responsive to external circumstances. For example, we all know April 2nd is, you know, so-called Liberation Day for Donald Trump. But we know that international trade and tariffs are going to be the topic of discussion. So if a party had a trade-related announcement planned for day 20, well, grab that and move it up by a couple weeks. That's just smart.
Okay, and then what, day 8 goes to day 20? Is it like a Rubik's Cube?
Where exactly. You just kind of shuffle it around and make it as responsive as you can to real-world circumstances.
Okay, so you get to kind of unfurl your platform in just a different way, but you get it all out there.
Yeah, precisely.
So that's the goal. That's the key.
Yeah, but and that's precisely why a poorly managed controversy, as we saw with Paul Chang, can be damaging. You can't just move things around. If you waste, if you lose 3 days or 4 days, you're not going to get them back.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. Speaking of not getting things back, the polling, the polling is swinging around a lot. But this week was interesting because I'd just love to know your take. The conservatives and liberals seem to be in a very tight race. Depending on the polls you're looking at, it shapes out differently. What do you make of it?
Well, most polls will now show the Liberals with a, you know, several point advantage over the Conservatives, outside the margin of error advantage over the Conservatives. So that's good news for the Liberals. Some polls are still showing them like in a dead lock, neck and neck. But bear in mind that when the Liberals and the Conservatives are in a dead heat, when they are tied, say 39% to 39%, that is actually an advantage for the Liberals because the Liberals tend to have a more efficient vote. The Conservatives tend to have a more inefficient vote.
Can you give me an example of that?
Well, the classic example would be, say, Alberta and Saskatchewan, province-wide, where the Conservatives are hugely dominant with like 75% public support. You don't need 75% to win. You can win just as handily with 40, 41, 42, 43% support. So the delta between 42 and 75% is, you know, in macro, you know, campaign planning terms, wasted vote. It's still reflected in the national average, which gets you to that 39 or 40% nationally. But those extra votes in Alberta and Saskatchewan do not translate into new seats.
Right. So less strategic. You have to be strategic about where you're getting that voter efficiency.
Well, there's not much a party can do about where it happens to be popular. Yeah, you can tweak your messaging to try to expand your popularity in different regions, but it's essentially a curse that befalls every party in certain parts of the country. Every party is prone to inefficiency. The Liberals are inefficient, say, in central city of Toronto, city of Montreal. The NDP have pockets of inefficiency in parts of the lower mainland of BC or, you know, in some parts of the Halifax area and so on. It's just that inefficiency tends to plague the Conservatives a little bit more disproportionately than the other parties.
Okay, I like the term expanding your popularity because unfortunately the NDP leader looks a little bit vulnerable in his own riding. What happens when a party's faced with that? And do you think he's going to lose a riding or winning based on what you've seen in the polling?
Well, true, the NDP has fallen. And, you know, when we talked earlier about the Liberals rather having having an edge over the Conservatives in national numbers, it's not the Conservatives losing ground. That's the Liberals gaining ground, and mostly at the expense of the NDP and the Bloc Québécois. I mean, the Conservatives may be down 2 or 3 points. The Liberals are up 20 points. So it obviously came from all parties, and most notably the third parties. So bad news for the NDP. Their polling is really, really weak right now. I would still be surprised if Mr. Singh lost his seat, because parties can rearrange, remarshal their internal resources to focus them where they need to. Obviously, it's embarrassing when your own leader loses his or her seat. So you try to make sure that doesn't happen. You send extra money, extra volunteers, extra lit drops, and you just blitz that area to help give them a boost. Look, parties do not allocate their resources uniformly across 343 ridings.
Sure.
They prioritize. We're really strong here. We're kind of strong there, but can use more of a boost. We're weak there, so let's not waste money there. Let's not waste money also where we're really strong. Let's focus on the swing zones to try to put us over the edge.
Okay, so that sounds to me as though it requires a fair amount of nimbleness on the campaign. When you're talking about the polling, the Conservatives are not losing ground. They're just not gaining ground as quickly, right? Available ground out there, fair to say?
By and large, yeah.
Okay, so what do you make of their falling behind the Liberals? Because the chattering class is saying they haven't pivoted their messaging, their scripting. Like, is that a valid criticism?
Yeah, you're right. Everybody's talking about this. It's become one of the favorite topics of conversation in Ottawa. Oh, the Conservatives, they didn't pivot. Are they pivoting enough? And so on. Like, there are two schools of thought. One school of thought is Pierre Poilievre got vaulted into prominence over the last year and a half because he was talking about stuff that really mattered to regular people. Pocketbook issues or bread and butter issues. Cost of living, cost of housing, taxes are too high, you know, crime, and so on. It's resonated. It has resonated with people. That's what made him popular. Now, obviously, the elephant in the room, Donald Trump, injects a whole bunch of new discourse into the election campaign.
Problem Orange is, spray paint all over the place.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but problem is, do you really want to jettison all the scripting, all these policy drops about issues where you know you dominate, just to chase, just to get on the bandwagon and talk about the same stuff that everybody else is talking about? There's a risk in doing that. So some are arguing he ought to do that. Others are saying, no, stick to your plan. Don't chase every new shining object that comes our way, or you're throwing your strategy out the window and then you're kind of blowing in the wind. So we'll know on election day, you know, where that appropriate balance is. Now, in reality, Mr. Poilievre has pivoted, but he hasn't dumped his old messaging. He's hybridized the two. He is still talking about the same themes that he was talking about in December, but he is also talking about standing up for Canada, staring down the menace from the South, and so on. So he's trying to do both, and we'll see at the end of the day whether that balance was struck appropriately.
Okay, well, that's the end of the day for this podcast. Tomorrow's Liberation Day. Is someone taking you out for drinks tonight for your birthday?
I think that's Liberation, not Libation Day. Sure.
Well, you need Liberation Day preceded by Libation Day just so you can get through it. Okay, Yara, we'll be back next week at The Swing.
Okay, thanks, Heather.
Thanks, Yara.